There's something on on Prime. There's a program called Last One to Laugh.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
It's so funny watching ten comedians trying to make each other laugh, and they're all sat there trying not to laugh. Because as soon as they even make a smile, it's like
that's it.
They're getting a warning or they're out. Yeah, and it was so funny because was it Bob Mortimer on it? And they all class him as a legend kind of thing. And every so often they have to do their act, so they put together a little show, and they all have to sit there and watch it, but they are not allowed to laugh. And he's just doing all these shit magic tricks. and he's got It's a Kind of Magic in the background, and he's going shh, it's magic, and he's just they're looking back, camera pans back to the figure, and they're going oh my god, and they're like trying to keep their face as still as possible. They're going, I can't bear this anymore. It's like, and it's just hilarious. And his what's his name? Jimmy Carr.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carr?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's hosting it. And they're all sat there in like watching it like Big Brother style kind of thing. And the thing. And he's crying with laughter. And he's like, what? It's just hilarious. So
fantastic.
And then because they did that, one of the guys, what's his name? Joe. He's on 8 out of 9 Cats countdown thing.
Yeah. I love that. So good.
He laughed in the show, in Bob Mortimer's show, or he covered up his face because he was like smiling. So they penalised him and said, said, right, you now got to sit on the naughty step. So they brought out this naughty step. He had to sit on it. And then every person had to walk up to him and whisper something in his ear.
And he wasn't allowed to laugh.
And he wasn't allowed to laugh. This random, she was brilliant. She was like holding her nerves. She's really good. She made people break.
Mm.
And she said, I didn't want Joe to go out. And so she thought, I'm just going to think of the like simplest thing. Just to say in his ear, and that was it. Hopefully, and hoping not to make him laugh, and she walked up and said, "Hoity naughty" or "Toity naughty" or something like that in his ear, and he just burst out in laughter. It's like the complete opposite of what she wanted to happen.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh.
But yeah, it's great. It's on Prime.
I've seen that. I need to look at that.
That's why I was going through my head when I was singing It's a Kind of Magic. Don't know why.
Mm.
Right then. Let's do this. Right.
Cool.
3, 2, 1. Welcome, dear listeners. This is episode 139 of the Devon Dice Podcast. In this podcast, we're bringing you news and what games we've been playing in the past couple of weeks. I'm Joe, the host of the podcast, and joining me is just Nick, the resident board game
designer. Hello, folks.
Hi, Nick.
Yeah, just me today.
It kind of my fault. Bit of a late notice, bit of who wants to record tonight, because I realised it was Sunday and I hadn't put anything out. So Sam said he could, but couldn't because he was away.
He was well enough, but he.
Yeah, well,
poor thing.
And Claire's too engrossed in a American TV show that she just can't stop watching. So leave her to it.
So, indeed.
So yeah, so it's been a couple of weeks since the last one. Yeah, finally got out a decent podcast this time. So I hope you enjoyed an actual extended version of our podcast, which is the normal size podcast. quick news or quick events coming up. Fox and Hound have announced via email that they are doing the October event, which is the 17th and the 19th of October. So rooms are now available By the time I get this out, I can't guarantee there will be any rooms left. So I do apologise if I've got your hopes up. But there will be day tickets. And the other podcasts, Whose Turn Is It Anyway, are doing the day event tickets this time. So look out for news on that.
Nice. Look forward to that.
Tavistock Board Gaming Convention. I don't know if this is new or it's just new to us.
It's new to us.
Got a little gig going on. Yeah.
Yeah, they put a flyer in the last October's Fox and Hounds. I think they had a flyer for it. And as it's right. local, I thought, oh, we can pick that up a bit. So I think it's they've had it before. But yeah, this is the first time I've learned about it and remembered to mention it.
Did I check the dates that if I'm working or not? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's 3rd and 4th of May. Just the Saturday.
Oh, no, I'm not working Saturday. Oh, Friday. I'm not working Friday. I am working. Balls. Anyway, I won't be going to that then. So, yeah, if you're in the town area.
Tickets are pretty decently priced as well. £7.50 for 2-day tickets. £4 for each day. Yeah, have a look.
It's basically funny. Thinking of Tavistock, I was just on Facebook scrolling, as I usually do, doom scrolling, and a video came up and it's like, why is Tavistock the most angriest village in UK? And I was just like, what is this all about? And this guy is like, he's basically kind of doing some kind of local travel article on Tavistock and basically saying they're the most angriest
really,
and giving all his views, but it was really all tongue in cheek and really quite funny. I was like,
indeed, I like Tavistock. It's nice town.
I have to find that link and see what it is. Yeah, Tavistock's a beautiful. Tavistock is a beautiful town, just north of Plymouth. Is it north of Plymouth? I think it is.
Yeah,
it might be way out.
It's about 15-20 minute drive or so, I think.
Yeah, it's got lots of history, lots of character. So, yeah. But just be careful because they are angry, apparently, up there. So don't upset them. No, I'm kidding.
Just let them win all the board games. You'll be fine.
There is a board game shop up there as well. So I don't know if it's linked with this convention.
I think it might be. But... I think it might well be. Because it's Tic Tac Tabletop is the website. And that's the name of the store, I think.
Ah, so it's them then. It's them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the pulse of the information.
Yeah. Everything up to date.
So news. Nothing much has happened in the news. Bit boring, bit nothing to do, isn't it?
Well,
some guy in a wig is putting extra charges on stuff coming into his country.
So tariffs is the big word of the day. But don't worry, he doesn't know what they are really, so he's just making things up. So this is the news that Trump in America has in a increasing trade war with China on tariffs, and has just kept increasing tariff rates on incoming goods from China, which is paid for by the importing company, and that is all. A lot of the U.S. board game publishers therefore going to be hit by this, and so at the moment. Unless there's more backtracking, which we'll mention in a minute. But at the moment, it is a 145% tariff on incoming goods from China. Specifically for board games, it will be, we believe. And that will basically, anyone importing stuff will be paying 3 times the amount of their cost of their goods on the tariff, which is company breaking for a lot of small publishers and medium-sized publishers would really struggle to suddenly find that much, especially if they've already got stuff on boats, on the water already coming, and they couldn't delay it or anything. And a number of companies are delaying shipping stuff now because they don't know if they could be able to afford to put it into the country once it arrives. And it's all up in the air because it's continually changing, and Trump backtracked yesterday or the other day on electronic goods. So they're not going to be covered by the tariff, but they're still going to, they're going to have the baseline, like 20% tariff, but still everything else 145. So who knows where that will go, but it's so volatile that companies just can't plan anything. And that's the real issue. And if it can't get resolved, then they're going to have to either put prices up stop making as many games or they will go out of business, which is the sad truth of things. So a lot of publishers have contacted Eric Martin on Board Game Geek to he kind of sent out a questionnaire saying, you know, how's this going to affect you, and a lot of them replied with a lot of detailed things, basically all in the same boat, saying, yeah, this is gonna, if not bankrupt us, this is going to be severely dropping the quantity of stuff that we can import and therefore what we can sell. A number of publishers are now looking to print stuff in places other than China, but still not the US, because there are no manufacturing plants in the US that can produce anything like the quality needed. So they're looking at publishing things in Europe or in India, which is still a lot more expensive than China, but it is a lot less expensive than either importing into the US or printing stuff in the US. But the only real manufacturer in the US that can print to any volume just does card-based production. So if you've got a card game, you're probably okay. But if you're doing anything remotely different with board and meeple and plastic injection and things, there's just nothing in the US. And you couldn't even start up a functioning factory because you would have to import all that machinery from China, where most of it's made. And so you'd have to pay a huge tariff on that. So yeah, it's all a bit of a mess, really.
Yeah. It's amazing. There's been a couple of good articles written by many publishers. Stonemaier, Jamie Stegmaier has one that has written two covering this. Two articles.
And we've linked to
one when it was like the 54%. And he explained that basically it's still cheaper to print in China than it is to get it printed like anywhere else. Even though they'll still be paying much more.
And at that point, he
weighing
said
it up, costing
they
it.
Would just have to increase price of the games, the RRP.
Yeah.
And that was only 54%.
Now it's at the 100. Mm. Yeah, that was only 54. And now it's 148%, did you say?
145, something like that, yeah.
Something like that. That's it. Yeah, I think that would be breaking for most companies. It does make me wonder what the likes of Simon have done, because I've been watching their posts recently.
Yeah.
They've still got DC United in print.
Got a lot still.
Was yeah, it like seven and it's in, like, well, so what's going to happen? Are they just going to...
Yeah.
What, are they just going to, like, once it hits America, are they just going to put a second bill out to people and say, well, I don't know if they've even put out the shipping charges yet. So, people that back that are going to be hit with an extra charge. Because... Simon,
as well.
Don't qualm about charging people the actual cost for shipping.
If they wrap the tariff cost into the shipping cost, that will be a huge jump in shipping, especially for the US, who are used to paying very little for shipping. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. As I said, it's all up in the air and changing this. I read an article just the other day saying that all the ports in the US. Currently, because everything's changing so fast, they haven't had the paperwork through, so they aren't actually collecting the tariffs yet, because there's no legal framework to actually be able to do that yet. So they weren't even collecting the tariffs as they were. It's all a huge mess. And I do feel very much for all those publishers in the US. And indeed, publishers around the world who are sending stuff to the US, because that would still be imported
distributors. I mean, we might just say, oh, well, just buy German, German-made board games or British-made board games. They're just sent to each other. What's the problem? It's, well, US is probably one of their biggest markets.
Yeah.
Mainly because of size. And then
you would say it's about probably 50 to 60% at least of most publishers' sales would be in the US.
You got the likes of Gen Con and Origins coming up later in the year. Like, are they going to be downsized because like companies will just say, "Well, we haven't got the products now. We've put all
and Gen Con and things cost a lot of money to go to."
Yeah,
so they'll be reducing their floor plan, possibly, maybe not going at all. And I've seen some companies saying that they are downsizing their presence at these conventions because they just can't afford now to pay for it. They have to cut costs somewhere.
And this is just our hobby. I mean,
And board gaming is a tiny
amount. He's not just picking on board games. He's picking on all products that is coming from China. And like, it's so funny. You read some of the Facebook comments and people saying, oh, yeah, we just need to start making it in America and make America great again. And like people say, you go around your house and you find me stuff made in America. And I bet you it doesn't even come 30% of what is made in America.
Very small.
And I think people are just shocked at how much is made from China, kind of thing.
Yeah, they don't realise it. But even bits that are made, like you have a laptop battery maybe that's made in China, and that might then be shipped to Vietnam, and then the whole machine ships from Vietnam. So you still wouldn't know, or parts are made, you know, raw materials are made in China and shipped to things like Italy and something, and they all construct it and say made in Italy, because technically they made it, so they just source the materials elsewhere.
Well, as you see, it's a flowing thing at the minute, or a free flowing thing, where it's just up and down. We just, like you say, one morning you could wake up and it'd be 154%. Next morning, he's like changed his mind and it's, oh yeah, we'll take it back down to 50%.
Yeah,
I think there's a bit of a game going on here with the stock markets. I wouldn't be surprised if he's doing insider trading.
Well, there was the story that he tweeted out on his Truth Social like 3 hours before he reversed some of those tariffs. He'd said, oh, now's a good time to buy. And so everyone's now saying, oh, that's definitely insider trading. But obviously there's no way to prove that at the moment. Definitely something going on there. And the idea that you can just spin up a factory to build the stuff is just is ridiculous. Because who's going to invest in that when in possibly 4 years' time, when he's out of office, the next president will change it all?
That's it.
And then suddenly your factory there that you've built and is making very expensive stuff is going to be undercut by all the countries again.
Again, too
political. So yeah, they're not going
to
invest in
it. Let's get back to board games. And on crowdfunding. So that is it for news, really. Got some little bits coming up. News. Jamie Stoutmeyer did mention there is an expansion for Finspan coming out soon.
All right, cool.
We'll have to see how that goes because of the tariffs, but yeah. Because he had to do a little variant rule for Finspan because apparently if you the deck runs out, which has never happened when I played, so the communal draw deck runs out, you're meant to shuffle everyone's discard piles together to make a new deck. Which is a little bit unfair, where people have like been trying to, like when you because you got your own discard pile, trying to keep cards back. So if then suddenly you lose it because someone's drawn the whole deck, it's a little bit unfair. So he changed it that you may keep one card from your discard pile as your personal discard pile again. So yeah, and then
I've still yet to play news. I've still yet to play Finspan, so I'm still keen to try that. See what the differences are. Yeah, the one I just wrote in. So it was announced a little while ago. Corey Konietzka, who is a well-known designer, he was CEO. Well, he is currently CEO of Unexpected Games. He does all their designs for them, and he is retiring as head of the studio. And actually, in his farewell note, it sounds like he's actually retiring from game design. I don't know if that's just the way it was worded, but it does sound like that. With one more game that is in production or in development, will be coming from him next year. So we'll see what comes of him. But yeah, he's well-known designer. Done things like Voices in My Head and 3,000 Scoundrels and the Mandalorian Adventures, amongst many, many others. So, yeah, sad to
see. He did a lot of work for Fantasy Flight Games, so...
Yeah. But, it seems fair enough. He's done almost over 19 years of board game design stuff, so probably deserves a break.
Definitely. Wish I could retire.
Yeah. As we all do.
Anyway, Crowdfunding. Got a few little things that have popped up. Quite interesting. And on Kickstarter, we've got Scales of Fate, a two-player game from the world of Veil Fate.
Yep, so this is coming from Ivy Studios, who did release Veil Fate, I want to say 2020, I think, which was a fun, kind of ideally eight-player kind of social deduction game. It was a lot of fun. And Scales of Fate, is they've condensed it down into a two-player version because the Veil Fate didn't really work as a two-player, I don't think. So this is a dedicated two-player version in the same universe. Very nice bits, as you would expect from Ivy Studios. Looks really nice. I haven't watched the gameplay of it yet, but yeah, looks interesting. The crowdfunding technically is over, but you can late pledge on the Kickstarter. So we've left the link there for you.
Yeah, they did very well.
Yeah,
did very well.
They're very popular.
I don't know if it's enough to cover the tariffs in America, but
well, indeed, yeah. Let's we'll see.
That's the thing now, you're seeing a lot of Kickstarters also in the shipping details mentioned, and it might depend on what the tariffs are for getting it into America, so stay tuned for that. Formaggio? No?
Formaggio.
Formaggio. Oh yeah, we've got to put the accent on it.
Got to put the Italian in there, yeah, that's it.
So yeah, this is basically a standalone expansion for Marge. It is more or less the same thing, but based in Italy, not France this time.
That's right, yeah. We don't know much more than that. If you have a look at the Kickstarter, it's got all the details on it. But Fromage was fulfilled to backers January, February time. Got some very good feedback on that. We've played it on Board Game Arena. It's quite fun on there, with a kind of Lazy Susan style board that twists around for your actions. It seems like it's an iteration on that theme, with the set in Italy. And it does say expansion, which means it might play with, in addition to the other one, but it can also be standalone. So,
So, Formaggio is pretty good, actually. We played it on Board Game Arena. It's a nice little concept with this kind of Lazy Susan board. And kind of worker placement. You're putting out cheeses.
Cheese workers.
So yeah, you're putting out cheese workers in this section, in the section that's in front of you. So it's a round board and it's split into four sections. And you can only place in the section that's in front of you. And it might do different things. And you're trying, it's like, could be area control going on, and it could be majority of stuff going on, things like that. You're doing for actions, and you're doing for points. But also, it depends which way your worker is facing as well. Because then once everyone's done an action in their section, the board will turn, and then you have a new section in front of you. And if your workers from previous rounds are facing you, you can take them back from the other sections, which is really a cool concept. It's like quite ingenious.
It's a clever way of doing worker aging. So how long it takes them to perform the action. Yeah. It's kind of like a very, very simplified Zolkin kind of wheel.
Yeah. So, and I think with this Formaggio.
Good accent, I like
Formaggio.
It.
I'm just going to call it Formaggio from now on. Formaggio. So it's now four new sections, and you can actually mix and match the sections into each other, so you can play different things. It looks really good.
New ability
I'm not sure about the artwork. It's a bit kind of...
It's quite stylized artwork. It's very stylized. I'm not sure about the artwork as well, but it's functional. It worked.
It does.
Good.
As I said, the gameplay is pretty good. If you scroll down, Nick, there's a bit where they're showing you how they put together all the boards, kind of thing, so you can mix and match them up.
Yeah.
And of course, you're going to get wooden components with this instead of like the tokens and things like that. So yeah, you can get a limited edition copy for $59, or you can get both copies, standard, limited editions for $128.
Is that including the neoprene mat and stuff? That's all the limited edition stuff.
So that's just. Yeah, it's just limited.
No, it says the limited editions, which has got the wooden bits and the neoprene mat and stuff. So it does include those.
Okay, yeah. Oh, it does. It's just I went down to the bottom and then it had add-ons. But yeah, I think you're right. It all comes into a limited edition. Yeah, okay. So yeah,
and individually, they're decent price. You know, it's $39 for the standard edition and $59 for the limited. So $39 is a pretty good price for what you get. Because it's going to be $50 after. They are optimistically showing US shipping as $4, so I'm thinking that might be adjusted eventually. But we will.
Shouldn't laugh. We'll see. Not their fault.
We'll see. It's not their fault. No, nothing they can do.
Back this project. How long has it got left? It's not telling me how long it's got left. Has it finished or?
It has finished, but it's on late pledge, so you can just go and late back pledge. It or whatever you want to get.
Awesome. So yeah, another late pledge. We're on it.
Yeah, we're all up to date. Delayed. Well, the next one on the list is actually up to date. And it has a whole 16 days to go. So the next one on the Kickstarter list is Pulp Romance, which is a solo game by Todd Sanders. Todd Sanders done a number of little games like this that I've looked very nice. I like his stuff. And this is very distinct art style. He's done a number of these pulp games now. So this is the latest one. It looks like a cute little car game with some great kind of 50s style artwork, like pulp novels. Have a check at it if you'd like solo games. It's fairly decent priced for €20. It's on four is the base version. Just have a look. It's quite unique art style. I think it's pretty lightish gameplay, which he tends to do kind of light medium style games. Nice little small box. Yeah, looks quite cute.
Yeah. On GameFound, and this is one I'm kind of looking at, but not bad. I don't know if I'm bothered. Quartz. It's a kind of capture the flag kind of game.
Yep.
But it's got cute, weird characters that you can play. They're so cute. It's quite adorable. So yeah, all different kinds of monsters. You're a team of four, and there's four of you, or could be up to four of you playing. And yeah, it's basically trying to get one of your people into the middle, grab the flag, and bring it back to your base as quickly as possible. But all things can eschew, because each monster's got their own different abilities, and each one is controlled differently. So it's all a bit of a chaotic mess, and I like chaotic mess.
Gives me almost a Worms vibe. The components.
Yes, it is almost. Yeah, it is almost like a Worms vibe, except for not randomly chucking grenades at you that will just come back and smack you in the face.
Indeed. So slightly less random than Worms.
I think it's less random.
Cool.
But as I said, again, it's got good little miniatures set up.
Yeah, of course, really, really nice. You can buy
the all-in-one big box for $129. So you're getting the core game, you're getting four extra monster mobs, mini expansion, or a couple of mini expansions, and some extra flavouring stuff. So it's not bad price for that. If you like that sort of thing, go and check it out on GameFound. Adventurers is also up there as well, which I've put my pledge in. That came in as a not decent $128 again for all three games, and
For all three,
they've been pretty.
That's a good deal.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you can still go along and pre-order it. I might be wrong.
Is that what we looked at before?
I
can't remember. Yes, you can still pre-order on the GameFound link.
Yes. Because we struggled to find it. It's a bit weird, GameFound, when they have a pre-order system, it doesn't come up normally on like your front page. It's like you have to go look at your pre-orders. There it is. Found it straight away. You can go along. It's pre-order. $156 on it at. I think it is that because of taxes and shipping have already been included into that. So.
Okay. Cool.
It's not too bad. I said there's three games in there. And it's all been crammed into one box, so you're not going to have lots of boxes left over. If you go for the all-in collector's edition, you can buy all three games separately if you want to. Well, who's going to do that? Of course.
No, if you're going to buy all three, buy the bulk one.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Coming up, we have Shallow Regrets. So this is a button-shy 18-card game of Deep Regrets, which is coming out in May, which Sam's all over.
Just because he
likes to be a completionist on this theme. So.
This looks fun. It's the same designer, I believe, as the big Deep Regrets. It's 1 to 4 players. Plays in 10 minutes, apparently. So that sounds interesting. And you're trying to, what does it say? You create the best collection of unusual fish to maximize your earnings. So yeah, very much like Deep Regrets, really, just in 18 cards, which sounds pretty cool. It's always like
it's amazing when they're able to do this. Yeah.
And they are button shy tend to be quite expensive to ship to the UK because they produce everything in the US, I believe. So yeah, that's the only caveat with button shy, but it's still going to be probably under £20 once you add everything in.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good.
You might as well do the next one because this is all you.
Yeah, I've put the last one in. So all of you train game enthusiasts out there, so that would be probably me and PJ in the local group. That's about it. Age of Steam is coming with the 5th expansion volume of new maps. So this is 7 more maps. This is coming out in May. Randall is very slowly releasing the details of what map's going to be in. So the first map, Portugal, Madeira and Azores, is a Vitel da Cerda design map, which sounds fascinating. I really like the idea of that. And then the second one is The Moon by Alban Viard, which is a kind of a redo of his original printing, but in the new style. And then 5 others to be revealed at some point. So yeah, that's coming up in May. If you like Age of Steam, then that's looking pretty good.
Awesome. Right, and now we're on to played games. So this is the bit everyone looks forward to. If I know what classics we've been playing or what new cult of the new we've been playing. I've got 2 kind of cult of the news, and then Nick's bringing along the classics this time.
Yeah, classics with some new reimaginations. You go. You start then, Joel. Go for your new.
All right. Hot. So cult are very new. Quite literally fell through my doorstep, the weekend. Unfortunately, I was away. Fortunately, it didn't rain because it got left in my garden.
Yeah. That would be ironic for the game.
It would have been. Deep Regrets was the game, and. It is the bigger version of the one we just spoke about, Shallow Regrets.
Yep.
So yeah, this Kickstarter, played it at UK Games Expo last year with Sam. Sam actually loved it. I kind of enjoyed what I played, but I think because it was the third day, I was knackered. And in those environments, it's really difficult to learn a new game and get the idea of it. So, I just went with gut feeling of going, yeah, let's just back it. It was a good price as well for the game. You got an expansion with it. And so it turned up, took it along to club, and we relearned it and played it there in the evening. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was actually really good fun. I didn't do very well. I did suffer with a lot of regret at the end. And forgot about one of the end sequences. So what's great with it is like there's two ways it could end. You either get to the sixth day, which is the sixth round, and then you tally up. Or if you deplete the ocean completely, which if you think about it, there's like 13 cards in each pile and there's 9 piles. So you think, oh, that's like, that's going to be quite difficult. But in it, it's really clever. There is some cards that really deplete the game. And one of them, which was really cool, was called The Plug. And it's basically, as soon as you reveal it, then it says, right, from now on, at the beginning of each player's turn, the top leftmost card is removed, is discarded. So you're slowly diminishing the water level of the sea down, kind of thing. That was really cool. And then there was one card where I turned it over. Well, I had a power. I could look at a card every turn from something that I caught. And so I looked at this card and it said, basically, when you catch it, you discard the top three cards of each deck. And this is towards the end of the game. So I thought, oh, this is kind of quite cool. In a minute, there's going to be nothing to fish in the sea. So everyone's going to have to come back to harbour or won't be able to because they've used their lifeboat already. And I can then carry on. Forgetting completely once the sea depletes, that's the end of the game instantly. And so I did that. I jumped in my lifeboat, which if you do that, because you have an option at the beginning of each round. You either stay at sea or you go back to port and go back to harbour where you can sell your fish or you can hang your fish on the wall.
Yep.
Or mid-round, you can use your lifeboat to jump back in to go back to harbour. But that gives you 10 regrets total. 10 regret total at the end of the game. So I thought I was being clever by in the last round, do a couple of fishing, jump in my lifeboat, go back to harbour, hang my fish on the wall. And as soon as I got back to harbour, the last card got pulled out of the ocean. And then it ended the game. And I was just like, ah, balls.
Oh,
I think I had about 30 regret total.
Wow.
So, yeah. I think even if I'd stayed at sea, I don't know if it had been different. But, everyone like scoring like 45, 50 points, and I had something like 20 points because what happened? So whoever's got the most regret also at the end of the game loses their top prize hung on the wall, top prize fish, and I only had one hung on the wall, so that went bye-bye.
Cool.
But it was great. The thematic theme of the game is awesome. What you could pick up, because you can't always look at what you're trying to catch, so you're kind of looking at the silhouette of the fish to see if it's a big, small, or medium. Mm. And if you say, I'm going to fish in this pile, you flip over the top fish, and if it's got a reveal icon, you have to do what it says. If it's got a hook action, then when you actually choose to catch it, then you have to do what it says. And then, because you can say I can fish in here, you flip it over, and if you feel like, nah, actually I don't want to catch that, you can opt out of catching it completely and then take a bait card. I think it's called a bait card. I can't remember what it's called now. And it's just a little kind of fish card, which either gives you a little kind of one-off ability that you can do, which is quite cool. Yep. So yeah, the game's really clever. Really enjoyed it. Cool. I did chuck in the extra fish he gave in the mini expansion, just to like soup it up. And there is another little expansion where you give everyone a ongoing regret throughout the game. Which is, we didn't play with, but hopefully I might try and play with it next time. So my only concern with it is its longevity of continual plays. A lot of games will suffer that, but I think probably if by the third play, I might be a little bit kind of tired of it, but we'll have to see how that goes out.
Cool. Yeah. I'd like to play it.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you'll be there tomorrow night. Bring it along.
Cool. Yeah, it'll be good.
Go on then. You do one.
One of mine. Right. So, the club last week, while Joel was playing Deep Regrets, we were playing Amun Re, which is a classic Binding of Khaleesia design. This is the 20th anniversary edition from Alley Cat Games, which is a very nice production. And I think it was the first play, other than Chris, who owns the game and taught it, it was the first play for the rest of us. And we all, although we've all played lots of Khaleesia games, it's the first time we played this. And it was a lot of fun. We did get one rule quite wrong, which was the cost of purchasing. Bizarrely, we all read out, I read it out to everyone when we were reading, because we weren't certain at the start if it was the right rule. And I read it out and everyone, no, it works like that, it works like that. And it wasn't to the very, very end after we finished that Rob was rereading the rule book and going, wait a second, that's not what this says at all. So we got the pricing wrong for things. But because we all played it wrong, the game was still technically balanced between us all. And therefore, PJ obviously blew us out the water with his score. Very good play for PJ there. So this is a, in the Khaleesia style, it's a kind of an auction game where you're auctioning for... or you're bidding effectively for the different terrain areas around this area of Egypt. And you're trying to outbid everyone else, and then you'll claim one of the lands. So everyone is going to guarantee to get one of the, I think it's 15 spots on the board. So everyone get one in the first phase, the three eras. And then the second and third era, you'll get another one. So you'll have, by the end, you'll have... or the end of each era, you'll have three lands, three areas that you've won. The bidding is interesting because you have to outbid someone, but you can only outbid them if you can afford to. And if someone outbids you, you then get to move your marker or your worker onto a different bid card, which means you could intentionally position yourself where you think someone else is going to outbid you, and you don't really want this land that you've bid on, so you bid kind of medium low. And then you're waiting for them to deliberately outbid you, so you can then go and bid on something else for really cheap. Because once there's no more conflict on the bids, then the bidding resolves and everyone pays whatever they've bid there on the one that they've won. And you could bid zero and just pay zero and you get everything, but you could bid up to 28 or even higher if you really want it. So there's that nice interaction night, very interesting Khaleesia style bidding. Once you claim a land, some of the lands have bonuses you get for claiming them, and then after that you go into a phase of buying certain things. You can buy stone, which is used to build pyramids. You can buy farmers, which generate you effectively points or money. I can't remember which way around that is. I think it's money. And you can buy cards, and the cards are kind of special abilities that tweak the rules a bit here and there. And also the cards will give you in-game scoring objective as well. So you could like have majority control on one side of the Nile, or have the most farmers out, things like that. And so you will get the chance to buy as much as you want to from the cash you have. And this is the bit we got wrong, which is we were doing the too higher scaling. So everything was costing a lot more than it should have, which restricted how much we were actually doing. It would have been much more flowing if we'd spent the right amount. But effectively you're trying to buy enough stone you need three stone to build a pyramid, and you can have up to two pyramids per land. You can have farmers in the lands. The farmers give you $2 or whatever the currency is at the end of the round. And then there's a very clever adjustment on you. We all have to bid to donate something to the temple from your money cards that you have. And so you all will simultaneously blind reveal for the bid, or the amount that you're donating. Whoever has bid the highest amount gets three free awards. Second highest gets two, third highest gets one. And then depending on how much was bid in total between everyone, the temple marker goes up or down between one and four, depending on the range of costs that you've bid with. And you could actually play a thief card instead of your money, in which case you steal three money from the bank, and then that pushes it, as that acts as a minus three to the total. So you can deliberately tank the value of the temples, because some of the lands also have temples built on them, which will score that many points, depending on where that scale is, for the people who've got it, and that can be quite a bit of points. So that's a nice push-pull and way to balance the economy as well, because you only have a limited set of money cards. But yeah, it worked very nicely, apart from getting the rule wrong. I thought it was nicely balanced. It flowed nicely. It was, I think, as PJ mentioned this when we were playing, it did play a little too long for what I think it should be. However, if we had more money in the economy, then it probably would have gone a bit faster. We would have been so tight in what we were doing and calculating. But yeah, it was great classic Kanizia, a very nice production from Alicat. And it came with, I think, two or three expansions as well, which we haven't tried. So yeah, we'd play that again at some point. Yeah, so thumbs up for Alan Ray.
Yeah, it looked really good. And it's a Kanizia game, so it's one I need to try.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As I said before, I'm a bit of a fanboy of Kanizia by the what I've realised.
I'm sure the games I like of it. Yes.
Yeah.
So what was your next one, Joel?
So my next one came out last year for Essen, I do believe. Kind of a sequel. It's not really a sequel.
Spiritual
like
sequel.
0.2. Yeah. Yeah. Black Forest. So this is based similar to Glass Road, if not, as I said, like a sequel improvement on it.
It very uses similar. This
wheel rotation mechanism for controlling your resources, but this time you've got two. Do you have two wheels in the first in Glass
I think
Road?
You have two in Glass Road as well. Yeah.
Okay, so, so you got this wheel rotation to control your resources, but in this you're more focused on building, I believe. Now you're more like trying to get different buildings out and yeah. Just feels like you're just trying to build a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm doing two things at once, so I'm a little distracted. Put that away. Playing Marvel Snap while you were talking. Sorry. So yeah, there's a lot going on. I haven't really played Glass Road physically, so then I was trying to get my head around this. I played Glass Road once on Board Game Arena and didn't really get it. So yeah, I had to get my head around it. But it's one of those, like, moving your people around to different villages to enact actions, depending where you put your village, and managing your resources. And I really like the fact that these wheels turn once there's an empty spot on the hand dials, and like you're trying to manage that. So he's like, I need this resource, but as soon as I move this resource forward, when I gain some more, it's going to move the hands forward, which then I'm going to lose that resource, because then the hands are moved forward and like taking that resource away from me. Because primarily you've made that resource, you've converted
it, kind of auto converts
into into the bigger resource. So one is glass, basic glass. And so you've got all the resources around there that help build glass, kind of thing. So once it moves forward, you've made another pane of glass. I don't know, one of those kind of thing. But the other one is
you've made some glass, I think. Yeah.
One, the other side is journeying. What's the? It's like provision packs and a caravan.
Oh, right.
So yeah, when it's all like food and meats and coal as well in there. So when that moves forward, you've converted a lot of your food that you've stored up into provisions, so you can move around, because to move around the map with your person, you need to pay provisions. There's a caravan that moves around, which is a little bit odd, I thought, but it was a way of trying to manipulate the board and random move the actions around, so they're just not, it's not a stagnant board, it's almost a live board going on.
Yeah.
Which I thought was actually weird but kind of clever now I think about it. So it is one of those, I definitely need another play of it. You can build small buildings to put into your land, but there was also a set of bigger buildings and I completely forgot about them. And it went towards the end as like, oh yeah, they've got those as well to buy. I've got loads of resources. That was a point, there was like quite a few times where you, like at the beginning, you're struggling for resources, and then all of a sudden you've got loads of resources and you're overflowing with resources. And
then it's because you're like, meant to be spending them on the big buildings.
On the big buildings, yeah.
And they give you the points. Yeah, it sounds quite different for most of what you're doing compared to Glass Road. I think the resource wheels are the common bit, but Glass Road was driven by hand of action cards, where you're all simultaneously choosing an action, and then if anyone chooses the same action, you get only the basic side, whereas if only you choose it, you get both abilities, and you're each at a personal board, and they still have the building to building, but they have a personal board, you're trying to clear the forest out and then build the buildings in, whereas this is much more sounds like you're wandering around kind of the village and then moving to build and things, which is, yeah, that sounds like an interesting change. I really did like, I liked the card play in Glass Road, so I'd be interested to see how this plays out without that.
Yeah, so that sounds like it's now changed to this, the village's action spots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and the other people, the people only get stuff if you go into the same village as them. You have to give them a resource,
right,
for your board, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like you could actually manipulate it by saying, looking at theirs, oh, you're full on wood, so I'll give you some wood. It just means I lose wood and you don't gain any more. So,
yeah,
which is a bit naughty, but hey, that's gamification for you. And then, as I said, there's this traveling merchant where if you pay a caravan cost, you basically swap that action tile from one village to any space you want. It doesn't have to even be next to you. You can actually manipulate it. So actually, I want that action. So if I put it over here, I don't actually need to move a village. Because I then have to pay Nick a resource. So if I use my caravan and move this merchant out and into this village, out the village and move the action in I want, then all I need to do is move a spot in the village and you don't have to pay any resources if someone else is there, which is actually quite clever of, as I said, keeping it a kind of alive and evolving kind of setting, really.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
That sounds really cool. I'd be keen to try this out at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, I need another play. Now I've got my head around it. And I can remember there's big buildings to build. Because the buildings, they all do different things. There's like this three or four different sets of buildings. So there's ones that just convert for you. There's ones that give you stuff automatically. As soon as you build it, you get it. And then there's ones like scoring as well. There's not many of them. But then there's also ones where like passive abilities. So, yeah. And then the bigger buildings are like a big combination of several actions in one. And there's also jobs as well you can do. Oh, dog. What do you want?
The mascot.
The mascot. Being a pain in the butt. So there's jobs as well. So they're like, they come out at a certain point, and if they require a lot of resources, or you to do a lot of, do stuff. Like there's one like chop down free wood areas on your board. And when you do the job, if you go there and you actually able to transfer the cost, pay for the cost, then you actually get quite a lot back, a lot of resources back. So, but not necessary points. And there was a few times where I went and do jobs and it's like, was that worth it? Because now I've just got a lot of resources and it doesn't give me any points really. Glass gives you points at the end of the game. That's about the only one that does. So,
right.
Yeah. So yeah, enjoyed it. Got my head around it.
Yeah.
Needs another play.
Indeed. Like all good deep games.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So my other one I was going to mention very quickly because I talk about this far too much. I've been playing a bit more Age of Steam. As we mentioned, the expansion pack is coming out soon. So I've been playtesting a solo map that I've been designing, which is kind of inspired by Forbidden Island. So it's one of the variant Forbidden Island maps called Skull Island. So I've done a kind of a solo design for that, which is coming along nicely. Kind of trying to capture as much treasure as you can from the certain locations before the bits of the island sink. And then my son decided he wanted to play some as well because he saw it out and I had it playing and he said, oh yeah, let's play something. So I dug out one of my two-player map designs, which is actually Plymouth Tramways, which is the it is a two-player map based around Plymouth, which is where I live, from the tram network that existed in the late 18th, early 19th century. So that actually went very well. There's some tweaks I need to make to that, but it's feeling quite nicely balanced now. So that was fun to play those two out.
Awesome. Not much. I still need to play it. Never played it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I need to bring it along sometime. I've got so many maps now, I can do any player count that we need to. up to six.
Yeah. So that's it. I think that's a show for you. If you want to find out anything we've talked about on the show, then you could go along to the show notes. Hopefully they work. And you can click on links for pretty much everything we discussed because Nick is an enthusiastic linker. So, yeah, you can find it all out there.
Thank you. Indeed.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah. You're asking if the listeners really are still there.
Just, yeah. No, just asking you still there because you went really quiet.
I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay. So that's it. So yeah, if you want to send any comments or talk to us, then you can come along to our Discord channel. We are quite active. Like 70% of the time we're there. Nick's always posting the latest new.
It's been quiet in the last few weeks because everyone's been panicking about tariffs and not posting stuff. But I post lots of all the Kickstarter things that come up and any interesting blog posts from Board Game Geek stuff. Yeah, can have a read and stuff. Really nice chats.
So yeah, join that. Again, you can find the link in the show notes. And I think that's it. Say time to say goodbye. Well done for another show. Hopefully I can edit this and get it up properly and not give you 6 seconds of me saying hi.
What an awesome 6 seconds it was.
It was the best 6 seconds. Not. So yeah, right. Say bye, Nick.
Goodbye, folks. Thanks for listening.
And goodbye from me.